Welcome to part two of the December edition of the AA Grapevine, the magazine of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. We are continuing with the story, A Place I Call Home. It wasn't too long into my drinking when consequences became common. I went to jail for charges of drunken and disorderly behavior. My attempts to sober up became more common and futile. There was drinking all around me. In our small village, a day didn't go by without seeing someone staggering along the road. Someone passed out, people fighting and arguing. Drinking was everywhere. When I turned 24, my drinking came to a head. One night, in a drunken stupor, I seriously assaulted a friend. Coming to the next morning was so surreal. Things like that happened only in movies, I thought. I was hit with a serious assault charge and spent some time in jail awaiting court. I had been introduced to AA earlier in jail, where members doing service work brought the message in for inmates like myself. That's when I learned to live one day at a time, because it was the only way to survive jail time. Time couldn't pass fast enough. I was let out of jail to go to an inpatient treatment program where I was introduced to a stable, secure, and consistent environment, coupled with weekly AA meetings. To make a long story short, I relapsed again. At one point, I sobered up cold turkey. I had no program around to go by. I just decided one painful afternoon that I didn't want to smoke or drink anymore. Surprisingly, that one day turned into 10 years. I thought I was pretty secure in my sobriety until I became involved with an active alcoholic. I had hoped that he would sober up with me. You can guess how that went. Life with no higher power meant no growth or healing. I relapsed and went on to drink alcoholically for the next few years. Our relationship was volatile. I was starting to see fear in the eyes of my youngest children. I hadn't seen that look of fear since he was a baby. All my old character defects came roaring out. I had a sober friend I had kept in touch with all these years from having been in treatment. She had helped me stay afloat in the village. She got me in touch with some AA people who were on a committee called Remote Communities. I knew it was my one chance to finally stay sober. I let that guy go, but I could not stay sober even after he left. But I helped secure a place for the Remote Communities Committee to hold their meetings, all of which I went to. I believe my higher power provided a chance for all this to coincide. I've been sober since the weekend that the Remote Communities Committee flew in on an airplane to this small village where I had always felt so trapped. Little did I know they brought the message that would free me. I began to learn to feel okay being me, to love myself freely as they welcomed and loved me. Goddess, as I understand her, has given me so many blessings since sobering up. I could only stay sober with the unconditional love she continues to give me. Today, I call in to weekly AA meetings via telephone with so much gratitude. Through telephone and the internet, I'm able to stay in regular contact with sober members of AA and I do not feel isolated or alone anymore. Thanks to AA and the Remote Communities Committee, I can call this little village my home. It's a place I can stay safe and sober in. Moving on into the magazine, next story is Any Links by Marie W. of Arkansas, Kansas. A loner working on a tropical island off the coast of Belize was determined to stay sober no matter what. I was blessed to have gotten sober in Anchorage, Alaska, where AA meetings were held at nearly all hours of the day. Meetings have always been a key part of my sobriety. Then, when I was sober about 11 years, my husband and I got a job managing a small island resort in the Caribbean off the coast of Belize. While I did have a cell phone back in the States, it was not an option offshore or in a foreign country at that time. We had internet and email, but it was provided through a dial-up service and was very expensive from the island, so we only used it rarely and only for company business. Because of all the AA meetings I had attended over the years, I knew I had to be willing to go to any length for my sobriety. While I had worked the steps, I had never actually read the Big Book in its entirety, but I sure did so that season. AA has a Loners International newsletter that I subscribe to. It's designed for people who don't have access to meetings. It helps connect members to other remote members. Letters to my AA friends in the States were slow, and a letter often took a week to get to its destination, and another week or more for a reply, so meetings were a real challenge. While I knew there was AA on the Belize mainland, that option was not really available to me, but I soon learned that there was a sober woman on a neighboring island. She and I connected and we faxed each other weekly. A fax was quick and the phone charges were minimal, but since the fax went to the machine at her place of work, our messages were always very generic and casual, but it was a contact and a connection. And of course, I subscribed to the Grapevine and that helped a lot. While the warm tropical setting where I lived and worked was paradise, there was often strife. The resort had a bar for the guests, of course, but many of the staff also drank, and sometimes their drinking caused problems that led to frequent drama and stress. Occasionally, a sober guest would arrive, or a sober sailboater would stop in. That was always a welcome joy. Thanks to AA and my sober planning, with my AA literature, my regular communication, and other sober AAs, my willingness to go to any length to do whatever was necessary, by the grace of God, I stayed sober those years on that island, and mostly serene. Next story, Need a Meeting? Call Us, by George M. of Durand, Illinois. A local accessibilities committee put the word out to help homebound members and those in assisted living. This story is about our district accessibilities committee and what happened last summer. And what a summer we had. We had no idea what effect our project would have. All we knew was that we were going to try to reach our goal, which began with a question. How can we help alcoholics in nursing homes, assisted living, hospitals, and who are homebound? Surely they are out there, but where and how would we find them? Turns out the AA community itself was our best resource. Everyone knows someone who is ill, has limited mobility, or is homebound. We distributed our flyers and started announcing at AA meetings that we wanted to bring meetings and visits to those folks. We traveled around and spread this message at most of the meetings in our district. Finally, we were referred to our first member to help. We contacted him and started bringing AA meetings to him, first in the hospital and then at the man's home. The member eventually recovered his health and is going back to in-person meetings. He expressed to us how much those meetings we brought him meant to him. We were thrilled and humbled. Then came the next name and another. Suddenly, we got so busy, but we managed to get to everyone. We were up to 15 meetings a month for members in homes and care facilities. We relied on long-timers for volunteers and members from the people's home groups. There were those who balked at the offer at first, but after hearing about what we were doing, they started volunteering also. These meetings became a good way to get newcomers exposed to 12-step calls. Taking the time to show up at a home or facility to help another alcoholic who needed us. We all got a lot out of taking these meetings, meeting wonderful people, sharing our lives, expressing our common bond. We all experienced spiritual growth. The conditions and circumstances of each member we helped included a wide variety of situations, from simple illness to post-surgery, rehab, and life as a homebound person. We also took meetings to some folks who were terminally ill. We had not anticipated that situation, but we embraced it fully. Some of the members have since recovered. Some are still homebound or in assisted living, and some have passed. The work continues, and we stay engaged with folks right till the end. One member who was suffering greatly passed. When we met his family afterward, we were able to answer a lot of questions for them about their father and to pass along his last messages to his children. That eased their pain. We were so humbled to be of service during this sacred time of grief. The AA community has now become aware of this work being done, and most every group knows who we are and what we do. Now members approach us who have surgery coming up, and they say they will be needing meetings when the time comes. One member decided to move to assisted living, knowing he would be able to get meetings. This made the decision easier for him. Our project has had an impact on our whole district. It brought us closer together and taught us how to care for others. I've had many tears, much laughter, and many smiles this summer. I now understand what being rocketed into the fourth dimension means. We'll be moving on to an ordinary lunch. The author of this is anonymous from Louisville, Kentucky. One day in a quiet suburban neighborhood, a meeting of two friends becomes a life-saving opportunity to reach out. A dear AA friend and former sponsor and I decided to have lunch together. She had been a support to me for many years and had sponsored me through very difficult times, including the death of my beloved husband. Our lives had taken somewhat different turns as we both remained active in the program, sponsoring women and helping give back to AA. Because of our busy schedules, it was several weeks before we could find a good time to meet. I had been struggling and overwhelmed because my second marriage was abruptly ending. This time, not due to the disease of cancer, but rather as a direct result of the disease of addiction. Sheepishly, I asked my friend if she would mind coming to my home, which was a bit of a distance from the city in which she lived, and in an outlying county. In true form and without hesitation, she happily agreed. Not only did she agree to come out, but she offered to bring lunch. I had much to accomplish, but I knew that my time with her was important as a part of the fellowship of the program and the next right thing for me to do. When she arrived, we enjoyed the comfort of each other's company for a while as I explained my situation, and she listened intently. What may have felt like an ordinary lunch to her was a powerful reminder that my higher power knows exactly what I need and when I need it. My dear friend, noticing the beautiful day, suggested we take a walk, and as she and I strolled and talked in my quiet suburban neighborhood, we were surprised when we saw a mildly disheveled young man on the other side of the street. He was walking and crying as he spoke on his cell phone. He was clearly upset, looked quite out of place amid the well-manufactured lawns. We heard him talking to someone about trying to stay sober one more day and that he was not sure where to go or who to talk to. We looked at each other as if to say, "Are you hearing what I'm hearing?" We continued to walk a bit and could still hear the desperation in the young man's voice. My friend looked at me and said out loud what we both had been thinking: "We have to help." She ran after him saying, "We can help you, we can help you stop." By that time, the young man was a fair distance away and she ran to catch up to him. He turned toward her and said into the phone, "Hey mom, a lady is running and calling after me." When my friend caught up with him, she explained that we were sober and wanted to help. She asked the young man if she could speak with his mom. He handed over his cell phone. "Ma'am, we can help your son if he would like." After the call, my friend asked the young man to have a seat. Remarkably, he had a big book sticking out of his backpack. Intuitively, she asked him to take it out, and we sat on the curb and read how it works as this young man cried and moved his lips in synchrony with hers. A calmness descended, the grandeur of the Holy Spirit's presence and the power of the program infused this situation. We will intuitively know how to handle the situations which used to baffle us. I was in awe and began quietly sobbing too. I watched as my friend went to her car and after a brief time came back with a plan. She had called a car service and made arrangements for this young man's transportation and admission to a local treatment facility where he could get the acute help he needed. After the car showed up and the destination was confirmed, the driver commented, "Oh, I know that place. I got sober there 10 years ago." He then said to the young man, "Come up here with me, buddy, and sit in front." We all hugged as the two of them drove away. We remembered a promise made and shouted after the car, "Call your mother." My friend and I sat down on the porch and emotions welled as we processed the magnitude of the situation. This was our higher power doing for all of us what we could not do for ourselves. Several months later, my friend told me she saw this young man at an AA meeting. This time, instead of desperation, she saw in him joy and serenity. My dear sister in sobriety showed me how to jump in and serve others without hesitation that day. My problems took on a new perspective. I've been given this priceless gift of sobriety and need to always remember to give it away to keep it. This is the program of AA in action. This was not so ordinary lunch. And that's the end of that story. Next, we have a story on Tradition 12, Before I Speak or Act, by Jimmy C. of Peculiar, Missouri. Tradition 12 reminds him how important anonymity and humility are in his sober activities. Long before I began developing my qualifications for membership in AA, I was a member of the Boy Scouts. The Scouts tried to teach me to live by a set of principles. A Scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. An excellent set of principles, but I just could not practice or live by them. I always felt like a ship lost at sea with no foundation to anchor these principles to. I simply drifted through life without feeling any sense of purpose or direction. My childhood religious involvements also tried to teach me how to live by a strong set of spiritual values. But religion only made me feel guilty about not being able to live up to the religion's values. The Who song says, "I've got values, but I don't know how or why." As an alcoholic, my only sense of purpose was to be drunk. When I arrived in AA, I had no other sense of purpose or direction. I was dry, but still felt lost at sea. Fortunately for me, the group I sobered up in had 24 meetings every week, where there was a great deal of sharing about the steps and traditions, most of which I did not understand. With the guidance of my sponsor, I trudged my way through the steps. I was soon pushed into several low-intensity service positions where I could not do any harm. Then, with a little over 3 years of sobriety, I was elected group chair. In my mind, that meant I was in charge. For many of the group members, it also meant that anything they didn't like at the group was my fault. I no longer had to work the steps. Everyone else worked them for me. They were more than happy to take my inventory. They talked behind my back and told me where I needed to make amends. Service at the group level saved me from spending a lot of time taking a hard look at myself. It seemed I was always being accused of violating one of the 12 traditions. It made me start studying our traditions to find out if I actually was in any kind of violation. More often than not, I was not violating any of the traditions, but I sure did learn about them. Through this process of service, I began to feel a sense of purpose and direction. I still did not fully understand where I was going or why I should be there, but I no longer felt like a ship lost at sea. I was beginning to learn how to apply a useful set of principles in my daily life. Tradition 12 states, "Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities." And this gave me a solid foundation upon which I could anchor those principles. Step 12 suggests that we practice these principles in all our affairs. Tradition 12 recommends that we place principles before personalities. In the Boy Scouts, I was given a list of principles, but no foundation on which to anchor them. In my church, I was taught about the values they called commandments, but no foundation that I could build on. Our tradition 12 has taught me to build a spiritual foundation of anonymity upon which I can anchor AA's principles of recovery. When I still felt a lack of any practical direction on how to practice these AA principles in all my affairs, or the knowledge of how to place principles before personalities, I found these clear-cut directions that I needed, which were embedded in our 12th concept. The six warranties are clear. When I have a willingness to work anonymously and a desire to seek and do God's will, humility, then I have a solid spiritual foundation to anchor AA's principles of recovery into my life. That's the end of that story and the end of part two of the December edition of the AA Grapevine. Again, my name is Vicki Duke, and I am coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.